Hello, and welcome to the Aspen Podcast, Engaging Physicians in the Implementation of the Global Malnutrition Composite Score. My name is Peggy Gunter, Special Projects Consultant for the American Society for Parenteral and Enteral Nutrition, or ASPEN. We are honored today to have with us Dr. Philip M. Brown, Jr., MD. He's an accomplished physician, author, public speaker, and healthcare leader with a reputation of being a person of action. Dr. Brown earned his MD from the Brody School of Medicine in 1995 and obtained American Board certification in general surgery in 2002 and vascular surgery in 2003. Dr. Brown served as an assistant professor of vascular surgery at the Brody School of Medicine from 2002 to 2004 before entering private practice as a vascular surgeon with the Wilmington Health from 2004 to 2015. He then transitioned to the role of Executive Vice President and Chief Physician Executive of the New Hanover Regional Medical Center and served in that role from 2016 to 2021. It was in this capacity that he sponsored the organization's multidisciplinary dietitian-led efforts to improve health outcomes through identification and treatment of malnutrition in hospitalized patients. Following this initial success, the program was expanded by employing a community dietitian, as well as providing programs for outpatients facing food insecurity. In 2021, Dr. Brown became Senior Vice President and Chief Community Impact Officer for Novant Health, a position he held until February of 2023. Dr. Brown's achievements as a healthcare leader include serving as the president of the North Carolina Medical Center from 2020 to 2021. He has also established the Department of Health Equity and Human Experience as one of the many areas under his oversight as Executive VP and Chief Physician Executive with the New Hanover Regional Medical Center, where he advocated for health equity as a guiding principle. Dr. Brown is the 2021 UNC Wilmington Distinguished Alumnus of the Year and a member of the Marshall Goldsmith 100 Coaches. He is also an accomplished public speaker and co-hosts the podcast Unlikely Intersections. Additionally, he is an Amazon best-selling author of Do You Speak Patient? Under his pen name, Dr. Philip Brown. This podcast is brought to you by Aspen with the support of Abbott. Welcome, Dr. Brown. Can you outline why malnutrition and food insecurity are such important issues in healthcare today, and why physicians need to be engaged?
Sure, Peggy. Thanks for having me. The big thing about malnutrition and food insecurity is how prevalent they are. If you take malnutrition, it's going to affect 20 to 50% of patients. And if you look at food insecurity, we know that in most states in the country, about 20% of our children are food insecure. So if we think about the entire spectrum of nutrition as a food insecurity piece where people are unable to get the food they need, to a malnutrition piece where it's a little more complex because it might deal with issues of access to food or access to the right foods or not being able to absorb the foods. It's a little more complex, but it's crucial in healthcare today. And the treatment of malnutrition and food insecurity is one of the few treatments that we offer that is basically risk-free. We know that there is no downside to having patients get the proper nutrition. It is all 100% beneficial, and there are very few treatments in healthcare today where it's all reward and no risk. So for those reasons, malnutrition and food insecurity are huge in healthcare, and the opportunity is massive to make a difference into patients' lives.
Hey, thanks. Can you share with us your experience with hospitalized patients with malnutrition, the impact on health outcomes, and how you manage these patients from a health system perspective?
Well, going all the way back to my practice days, it's long been known that nutrition was crucial for healing. I'm a surgeon by background, and so operating on patients that are malnourished carries an incredibly higher risk in terms of patient outcomes, much higher risk of readmissions, much higher risk of prolonged hospital stays, of wound healing poorly and things like that. And so we've known that for a long time, and we go through different iterations of what it takes to better achieve that nutrition. But what we found over time, and a lot of our more recent work has shown, is that we still have a huge problem in diagnosis. We are not identifying enough of the patients who are at risk from a nutrition standpoint, because only about 8% of hospitalized patients get a diagnosis of malnutrition. And so they are undiagnosed and untreated. But as I said earlier, malnutrition is going to be present in 20 to 50% of patients, depending upon the population that you're treating at a given time. So the crucial thing is identification. And as we've moved toward that, we get a lot of more opportunity to do the risk-free interventions that can help patients. From the standpoint of how you manage it at the health systems perspective, at this point in time, we are strongly in the education component. We have to educate providers. We have to educate not only the providers, but really every component of the care system. And as we get into the details of the Global Malnutrition Composite Score, we'll talk a little bit more about how that works. But what we have to do as a system is make it easier to identify the patients, so much so that it really becomes automatic. And so once we've identified these patients who are at risk through very efficient mechanisms, then we can apply these risk-free treatments to get them nutritionally into the best place they can be to manage their medical conditions.
Okay. Specifically, can you tell us about the Global Malnutrition Composite Score, known as the GMCS, and your involvement with malnutrition quality initiatives?
Absolutely. Well, the Global Malnutrition Composite Score is now part of the Inpatient Quality Reporting Program. And what it really does is it assesses the percentage of hospitalizations for patients 65 years and older, a very high risk group, whose length of stay is over 24 hours, who receive optimal malnutrition care during their current hospitalization. What this really involves is a four-component treatment. As I said earlier, one of our biggest problems is diagnosing the patient. So the first component is, do they get a nutrition screening at intake? This can be by a nurse or a nurse assistant. And then the second component is, if that is positive, do they get a comprehensive nutritional assessment, really by a dietitian? Then the third component of the GMCS is, how many patients that are identified by the dietitian as moderately or severely malnourished end up with an official medical diagnosis of malnutrition? Remember that as we do any of these quality measures, everything has to track back to the electronic record to have a formal diagnosis. And then fourth, how many of the patients identified by the dietitians as moderately, severely malnourished have a documented nutrition care plan? So the Global Malnutrition Composite Score really takes this from screening all the way through treatment. And the ultimate score, if you will, is based upon the percentage of patients that get all that done, which is considered the optimal malnutrition care. And it's really crucial, again, because it's zero risk and all benefit for these patients that show up in a malnourished state.
Our goal at Aspen is to get physicians and advanced practice providers interested in using the GMCS as one of their inpatient quality measures. Can you suggest to us how to get physicians and advanced practice providers interested in malnutrition detection, documentation, prevention, and treatment?
Well, I think the first thing, again, comes with quick education and transparency about the current performance. So in organizations, when you talk about how a system works, the first thing you have to do is reveal performance. So if you can establish a baseline of performance, what percentage of patients are we actually diagnosing with malnutrition? Then you create a strategic imperative for the providers, who are typically people who are absolutely trying to do their best for their patients. It's the core guiding principle of physicians and PAs and nurse practitioners to take care of the patient. So if you're able to demonstrate, hey, you're only getting X percentage of these potential patients who really need these interventions done in order to optimize their care, then you get the aha moment that folks say, wow, well, we can make a difference. That's not quite enough, because you also have to create mechanisms where it's within the workflow and it is, I'll say, easy to get these things done. And so that's where you really have to go cross-disciplinary, work with your informatics teams to make it so that this kind of information is easy to get into the electronic record. It flows into the electronic record. You can get pop-ups in some cases that say, hey, this patient is at risk for malnutrition. This patient is screened positive for malnutrition. And it gets people thinking and takes them down very natural workflows to do the right thing. One of the things that we've seen in the era of electronic record keeping is it can get so busy that you miss things. And so making things really easy for the people who have to make decisions and trigger action is a crucial interventional step from a systems perspective. Making workflow improvements makes the life of providers better. It helps fulfill their, you know, desires to do the right thing. So to me, that's really a two-step process of getting them interested. Is one, help them understand the magnitude of the problem, right down to the level of how they themselves may be performing. You can blind it. You can give them number. There are lots of different ways we do quality metrics so that providers can actually see how they are performing relative to their peers, and then make it easy to do the right things to get the patients on track for the proper intervention.
Okay. So how can the nutrition community, specifically Aspen, encourage hospital physicians and other providers to be interested in using this? And what are the strategies most important to help overcome any barriers to using this GMCS?
I'll take those backwards. I mean, the biggest barrier is what I just talked about, is does your electronic record keeping system make it easier or make it harder to do this work? It's a fundamental job of health system leaders to make the right work the easiest work to do. And so we have to get that right in the electronic health record. That is a crucial strategy. The other crucial strategy is transparent demonstration of how people are doing. So we need to be able to make it clear how well we're doing at screening these people and how well these people who are treated do in their care in terms of outcomes relative to patients who are not treated. And we have a lot of great work. You know, we were part of it at New Hanover in some of the early work that we did, where we're really just showing, you know, incredible results in terms of the difference between outcomes. You know, 26% 30-day readmission reduction. I saw another organization had 27%. Everybody that does it are showing these great readmission reductions. And we know that's important. We know that's in the patient's best interest. You know, but we actually, in our work, saw improvements in appropriate diagnosis of malnutrition of 1,500%. 1,500%. Appropriate diagnosis of malnutrition improvement. We saw, you know, a 200%+ change in the diagnosis rate. And it just makes such a huge difference for the patients. And once providers are really seeing what this opportunity is and understanding the low risk associated with doing it, then it really becomes a downhill ski effort to really get them going, because people catch fire on this. The outcomes are so good and the risks are so low. I think ultimately, you know, in my perfect world, we would ultimately see these kind of screenings, these kind of scorings become standard of care. They're not yet, right? Like what we have now is that it is an option for the inpatient quality reporting program. But in the long term, things like this that carry such low risk and are so incredibly beneficial for patients' outcomes should become part of the standard of care, including really doing these assessments before elective procedures and things like that, because we know the outcomes are going to be so much better. So I think that's our, I've kind of gone beyond the question a little bit, but I think that's where this can go, because certainly every hospital system which treats the most critical patients ought to be doing this work. It ought to be very much part of the workflow, because the outcomes are so much better.
That's terrific. I know, having worked in acute care for many years, that patients may receive nutrition support of some kind in the hospital, but what can we do to assure an optimal transition to home in terms of nutrition, and which community partners are available to engage to support the patient at home?
This is just such a huge, huge thing. And I'm really inspired by the work that our dietitians at New Hanover Regional and at Novant Health did over the years in this area, because what we were able to accomplish is, first, you know, identifying the inpatients that were at such high risk for malnutrition. But then secondly, because you really can't complete the nutritional optimization phase during the hospitalization, it has to be longer, right? I mean, they had to get malnourished in the first place. They probably became slightly more malnourished, even despite your treatment, during the hospitalization because of the stresses of a procedure or an illness. And so there needs to be continuity. Well, in our case, what we did was we actually employed a community dietitian, and this became part of our continuum of outpatient care. And so upon discharge, patients who met certain criteria got community dietitian visits. And these are the patients that really, really did such a great deal better. And not just nutritionally, because one of the things we found out was that when our community dietitian got into the home, they saw different things that could have been health challenges in the home. Maybe it was trip hazard. Maybe it was a medication reconciliation problem or some question that the patient had. And so it enabled us immediately to plug those patients back into the right resources, either our hospital-based resources or community resources. And we had tons of community partners in terms of nutrition. In our area, we had Food Bank, of Eastern North Carolina. We had multiple community-based organizations, nonprofits that deal with nutrition for patients. We had lots of faith-based organizations that were engaged in members of their congregations who needed help. We had an organization called Nourish NC that does a lot of work with children at home. So really beginning to engage these community partners through the presence of that community dietitian was a huge win for us in terms of really filling out that continuum of care. And again, I think the outcomes are still continuing to improve, because what we began to see is that that community dietitian began to be a resource not only for the patients that he was seeing directly, but also for other organizations in the community who wanted to make a difference. They began to use him. His name was Skip Allen. They began to use him as a resource. And that is magnificent.
That's terrific. Okay, Dr. Brown, do you have any final thoughts to share with our listeners?
Well, I want to take it back to the one thing I said earlier. You know, in my perfect dream of healthcare, the global malnutrition composite score use would become part of the standard of care. There's just really no reason that every health system in the country should not be doing their best to optimize the nutrition of hospitalized patients, because it's all benefit and no risk.
Thank you. On behalf of Aspen, I would like to thank our guest, Dr. Philip Brown, for his insights, and thank Abbott for their support of this podcast. Have a good day.